Roland, I was born Roland, pal. Come on, let's hit it. you know, whatever.
That was a good one. That's a new. It's a variation on a theme.
I'm all stuck. Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we try oh so hard to make today make sense.
We do. I am Molly Wood. It is hollowed out shell Thursday. Shell status for me, at least, is medium. That is helped along by a really good trail run this morning. So endorphins are contributing, but I'm going to go with medium. I am fed up by unserious people in a time of serious problems, and that's all I have to say about that.
Is that a new thing, that we have a lot of unserious people in the time of serious troubles? That's not new.
No. I think that's probably why I feel a little fed up.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Still. Yeah. I think it's the still part of that that is really starting to get to me.
Totally fair. I get that. Medium. Mine is medium-ish. I'm on the slightly brighter side of medium, I think. I had to skip my ride this morning, so I'm going this afternoon. It's a lovely day. And that's enough about the physical activities of your two hosts. And we will now get to actually what we do on this podcast, which is a little bit of news to make me smile. And we will get everybody on about their day. Shall we?
To eat better. Like, is brown rice really
that's
so
right,
much better?
That's right.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Let's do the news. I will say one of the things that has been hollowing out my shell is, and I'm just going to have to own our profession in this conversation, is like the part where the media keeps trying to ruin the vaccine.
Like, oh, I know.
Remember early on in the pandemic and everybody was like, there is a shortage of masks. Don't buy masks. And there was a shortage of masks. And yet this sort of like constant messaging about not buying masks created a long-standing communication hurdle that had to be overcome. And and I feel that the coverage around the vaccine is starting to stray in that same direction, partly around the shortage, yes, but primarily around this like the weird horse race of like which one is better. So, like, the Johnson & Johnson one will come out, and it will be so much easier to administer and store. But does it have drawbacks? Gong, gong, gong. And then a whole long thing about the efficacy studies, which, you know, like, props to St. Neptufekci for writing 30,000 words on this topic. Mm-hmm. But all the 30,000 words essentially come down to, like, people, the top line around these vaccines and the efficacy is not what you need to pay attention to, right? It is not as though 65% of people will not get COVID if they get Johnson & Johnson, but 94% of people will not get COVID if they get Pfizer. That is not how this works.
Right.
These studies were conducted at totally different times before the variants occurred. And what all three of them do a really awesome job at is keeping people from freaking dying from this virus. So, like, get the thing. So that has been driving me crazy. That's been driving me crazy. However, luckily for humanity, if not our profession, nobody's listening, which is awesome. And now they're starting to actually send out the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. And people are like, oh, super. I just want the one shot. That sounds awesome. And also, it's way easier to distribute in places like big stadiums and rural areas and just like literally anywhere, because it doesn't have to have a like colder than space freezer. And people are really excited to get it. So thank you, people, for not listening to what the media is telling you. Also, can we just like stop already? Can we just like make it the rule that, hey, the only way we get out of this is if like pretty much everybody gets the freaking vaccine?
Yeah.
Can we row
together?
That's exactly
right. That's exactly right. Can we row together?
I totally agree. Thank you. Thanks for indulging
in
this.
David Leonhardt of the New York Times had a great Twitter thread today. He writes their big morning newsletter thing, which I think is called The Morning. But anyway, he had a great thread on this. And basically the upshot was shut up and get the vaccine. Just shut up and get the vaccine.
Shut up and get the vaccine.
Yeah.
And everybody needs it. Yeah. And I'm sorry. Like, I know that this is profoundly controversial. I really, really do. And I understand that we have serious equity and access issues. Yep. But if we shame everybody who gets a vaccine out of order or like accidentally does it or screws it up or goes and gets an extra or creates a website to connect people with extra vaccine shots. We are going to create the same situation that we have with the mask. Everybody has to get the shot. Get the shot.
So you, So you saying
don't cheat or steal, don't dress up like an old lady, but like get the shot.
Just get the shot. Right, right.
And there's this whole conversation, like, of course, about, well, like, well, they're caretakers and they got it and that doesn't seem fair. And then she's a teacher, but she's so young and healthy and that doesn't seem fair. And like, you know what? Knock it off.
Yep. No, I totally get it. I totally get it. The whole thing about shaming and where people who have valid medical reasons for getting the shot, I don't care if it's hypertension or whatever, and then they are being forced to publicly disclose their underlying medical condition because they're getting piled on by random people for having gotten the shot. That's just so not acceptable in about in about 97 different ways, you know?
Yep.
Let's assume
just because you can't
intention.
See it doesn't mean it's not there.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
And it's not your freaking business because you know what we need is everyone to get the shot. I'm just like, there's so much performative BS around everything related to the vaccine. But the this particular thing is killing me. Like, there is one thing that we need, and that is for everyone to get this stupid thing.
Yeah. Totally. Totally, totally, totally.
I feel better, though. I filled up some shells.
Well, good.
Thank you.
Good.
So, that was cathartic.
Sometimes you... Sometimes you need a rant, you know? Sometimes you just need
now
a rant.
Now I'm sure everyone will yell at me on Twitter and I'll get mad all over again. But yeah, my new rule, by the way, about the squats and the push-ups, that's really helping.
Yeah.
That every, did I tell you about this rule yesterday? Good. That every time I want to look at Twitter, I do some squats and push-ups? Yeah. It's great.
Yeah.
Super helpful.
You're going to be like a hard body. You're going to be hard body in like a week because, you know, that's just the way things are going right now.
That's how bad my addiction is.
Well, same here. Same here, except I don't have that kind of discipline. Okay, so mine is a climate changey thing. It's also an amazing interactive journalism thing produced by, shockingly enough, the New York Times, which does really well in interactive journalism. Anyway, they had a thing in the paper, and this is from yesterday, but we did What Do You Want to Know Wednesday yesterday, so I didn't have a chance. But a thing on the Gulf Stream and how it's changing because the planet is getting hotter. It's got, it talks about things like the cold blob. It also talks about things like the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation, or AMOC, and how what's happening to the Gulf Stream is bad in a thousand different ways for climate change and for the ramifications thereof. We just did a show on this. It's talking about European cities varying from their current normal temperatures by 15 degrees, which would be incredibly bad in so many different ways. I recommend this piece of journalism to you. I want us all to start paying attention to climate change more, please, because this is unbelievably important. And props to the New York Times for getting this out there. It's where the word, one more word that they use in this piece is tipping point. This thing about the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation, which is a sort of huge thing that happens in this huge body of water called the Atlantic Ocean, they're calling it a tipping point. And look, we've heard talk from Bill McKibben and zillions of others about how it's too late now and we'll never get back to 2 degrees centigrade or whatever the number is. But look, if the oceans turn over on us, we're done.
Mm-hmm.
We're done.
Mm-hmm.
We're done. Mm-hmm. And Elon Musk, I would like to buy a ticket. I would like to buy a ticket on Bitcoin in your next Mars exploration, please. You know? That's just...
totally. Because you know, we may need it.
That's what I'm saying.
This is mesmerizing. Sure.
It's wild, isn't it? Isn't it wild? The graphics on this are super cool. Yeah.
Also, it was really cool because I got to cold blob right when you said cold blob. It was like you were programming. You were my guide through this tour.
There
you
we
should
go.
Do like museum
there
tours.
You know,
side hustle.
Well, anyway, that's right. A little side hustle because who knows how long this marketplace thing is going to work out. Yeah.
That's beautiful. Shh,
did I say that out loud? Shush.
It's absolutely terrible. I know. It's totally like, I'm moving on. yes.
So anyway, read this piece in the Times. It's amazing. Yeah. It's really
Did you also hear, speaking of like terrifying things that may or may not be related to climate change, but that are super scary, that like there's been this earthquake swarm in New Zealand that has now sent tsunami warnings. Oh, yeah. Like Hawaii, I think as of still maybe right now as we're recording is under a tsunami warning. And in Iceland, They're talking about how their volcanoes, they've had 18,000 earthquakes over just a couple of days, and they think that it might be a volcanic eruption situation.
That's a lot.
Sorry, 18,000! Yeah.
That's a lot.
I'm telling you guys, like, we think this little pandemic is upending society. Just wait until literally nature turns on us.
Sweet meteor of death, come get me.
Seems like a good time for the Make Me Smile sting, in my opinion.
I was just going to say, let's hit it. Oh, man. So I originally had this one as a news item, but I moved it down to Make Me Smile because it's super interesting, but also really kind of good news. So 10 years ago, the city of Stockton, California started an experiment in universal basic income, just giving people money, no strings attached, in the hopes that that would free them up from some of the financial pressures in their lives to make things better for themselves economically. So what Stockton did in a nutshell is 150 families who were at or below the city median wage, median income of $46,000 got $500 a month. Okay. No strings attached. Just here, this is to help you out. And it did all kinds of things. It improved financial stability. It let them pay for food and gas and utilities without having to scrape. They used food stamps less. Less than 1%, by the way, of this money went to cigarettes and alcohol, which is a common bugaboo about people who are opposed to universal basic income. But here's the really interesting part, one of many interesting parts. And this, sorry, I'm reading this from The Atlantic. Annie Lowry does really good work for them on UBI. She wrote a whole book. In the Stockton study, Annie Lowry writes, the share of participants with a full-time job rose 12 percentage points. That is, those who got UBI were actually able to decompress enough to go on a valid job search. 12% of them, 12% more of them got jobs. In the control group, only 5 percentage points did it go up, jobs being gotten. So I think that's just, We're coming to a reckoning, whether we like it or not, and whether the Senate of the United States can figure out how to vote on a relief package or not, we are coming to a reckoning on this country in income inequality and the wealth gap. We just are. Look at the numbers, and we are. And so there will be more conversations at a serious policy level about universal basic income. And we now have a valid experiment over a decade on whether it works. And oh, look, it mostly does. It mostly does.
This is so interesting, too, because this is also going to be, this conversation is only going to be enhanced by the results of the relief checks having out too. Like what happens, you know, we really have taken a big step in that direction, which I think is something that people are worried about. But yeah, it is, you know, my son actually was giving me a lecture the other day about all the buildings in America that are uninhabited and what. And then, you know, and by the way, mom, did you know that in studies, when you just give homeless people a house, that most of the time, that's what they need to then get a job, to then get, you know, like it's just, it's Maslow's hierarchy. When you give people enough money so they aren't going to starve to death and you give them a place to live, they can be successful.
Yep.
And when they are successful, so are we as a society. Yeah, it's fascinating.
Totally.
And it seems really obvious to the children, and it makes me curious about what policies are going to look like in another 20 or 30 years.
Maybe we ought to let the children make the policy now, you know.
I mean, I have my moments.
Yeah.
Although we are keep arguing about communism. He's not all the way here yet. He's still in training. Still in training. We'll get there. I was happy to see this story by one of my favorites from the Times, Claire Kane Miller, who wrote that. Yeah. And this is really important because we keep talking about the burden, the unique burden of women during this pandemic recession. It has apparently been referred to as a she session. There have been all of those reports about women losing jobs at a higher rate than men. And what Claire Kane Miller writes in, I think, today's Times is that actually a new analysis of census data shows that mothers have returned to paid work and that that gap between the employment levels of men and women is almost equal now.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah. So that is phenomenal. That is great news for our economy. The part that is not great news, of course, is that all of the other work, kids at home and all of that additional labor is still happening. So these women are going back to work. Yay. Yeah. But still doing all of the work at home that they were doing before. Boo.
Yeah.
But I'm still going to call it a Make Me Smile because I think that is, I mean, like we will not be successful as a country if we have all of these women leave the workforce and stay out forever.
I was out walking the dogs the other day. I said this on the air today. And I saw something I haven't seen in this neighborhood in a year. A bunch of fourth graders actually walking to school. Like to school. Yeah, so they're doing elementary school reopening. It was wild. Wild. I saw one mother loading up her carpool, right? And I was like, hey, look at this. They're going to school. And she basically went, oh, my God, thank you. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was wild.
Yeah.
Totally wild.
Oh, my goodness. That's amazing.
Totally wild.
Yeah, help us out. Help us out. So get the freaking vaccine so our kids can go back to school, for God's sake, to return to where
just
we started.
Get the shot.
And that is it. Yeah.
We're done. Back tomorrow. Economics on Tap, the YouTube live stream, 3:30 out here on the West Coast of the United States of America, 6:30 on the East Coast. Time change in a week, by the way, for those of you who hadn't been keeping track. I kind of lost track. I was like, I thought it was this week.
I had not.
It's next week. Yeah. Yeah. Next weekend.
Anyway, good tip. See, we make you smart in so many ways. in the meantime, if you're looking for some additional reading, sign up for our newsletter. This week, we're talking about this fascinating thing that's been happening, the media industry's reckoning with its portrayal of female celebrities like Britney, Whitney, all these women, particularly from the 90s, although I did see an incredible piece about Billie Holiday and how Billie Holiday was sort of the original needed to be treated better. Yeah, it was amazing.
Isn't there a movie or a doc or something out, right? Isn't there a TV show?
There's a documentary
about Billie Holiday. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what I think sparked that article. And it was really interesting. Anyway, marketplace.org/newsletters. Just keep the learning going. Keep it going.
It's a separating out signal from the noise thing, man. There's so much noise out there. You got to find the good stuff.
So much noise.
Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Tony Wagner produces other stuff for us. Erica Phillips writes our newsletters and the Make Me Smart scale on your smart devices. Just for the record, for the producers who are writing these rundowns, I'm never going to say Tony Wagner is our digital producer again. That's the last time you're going to hear that phrase pass my lips.
Because it was ruined. It was ruined for us.
It was totally ruined. Yeah.
You guys, I commend you to this week's Alexa skills that Erica wrote, because they are all about like phenomenal women. And it was so cool and I learned so much. Today's program was engineered by Ben Tolliday. That very same Ben composed our theme music with Daniel Ramirez. Our senior producer is Donna Tam. The executive director of On Demand is Sitara Nieves. Man, Bent Holiday never felt so accurate as the last year.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.